Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker. I am indeed happy to be standing once again in this honorable house to make my contribution. I want to say thanks, a very special thank you to the people of Zinri South, Madam Speaker. In my mind, these people, they are very visionary, Madam Speaker, who have noticed, who have listened to me, and who have noticed that they needed someone like me to represent them in this honorable house. And I want to say a special very thank you to each and every one of them. Madam Speaker, at the very core of an excellent budget presentation by our distinguished Prime Minister, Honorable Stephenson King, are some simple familiar words. There are no grand economic theories, no lectures on political philosophy, just seven short words. In recovery, growth, social cohesion, resilience, no taxes. Madam Speaker, our Prime Minister, who is clearly an effective communicator, understands the value of simplicity. Is not sure about the man. Just simple. This is why his budget presentation is very clear. It is honest, and it is engineered to steer the ship of state on the road to recovery from the turbulence of global financial weather. Mr. Speaker, as Minister responsible with responsibility for labor, information and broadcasting, I am uniquely placed to lend support across ministries and sectors, both public and private. Let us look at the earlier scenario. Mr. Speaker, since 2008, St. Lucia and the OECF and the wider Caribbean region have experienced severe contraction in our economy, as we have seen in some cases, the total financial and economic collapse of some countries. It is not our doing. The economic forecasters from the major economic and financial centers from across Europe, North America and Asia, and which include international organizations like the IMF and the World Bank, are all indicating that Caribbean economies are likely to remain sluggish for the next 5-year period. And they're saying this from the backdrop that its previous economic growth levels, which St. Lucia and other OECF members enjoyed prior to the financial collapse. But this government, Mr. Speaker, has had to circumnavigate these new economic challenges and threats. We have had threats to our livelihood, to healthcare, to education, to social and recreational development, to our economic development, and the political freedom of our democratic institutions. Just, Mr. Speaker, in order to maintain the very heart of what makes us proud to be St. Lucia. And indeed, proud we are. If these various forecasts are correct, then economic indicators for growth expansion within our economy must, out of necessity, Mr. Speaker, be recalibrated to look at other economic and educational platforms which are necessary in preparing our human resources and retooling them towards providing new opportunities in the services and technology areas. In this context, Mr. Speaker, we are now facing another challenge, and the challenge is of the volcanic activity in Iceland and the early forecast impact that it will have on our economy. This is of major concern and importance, which requires all solutions to remain focused in ensuring that we understand the new challenges that are likely to result from this act of God. Again, right now as we speak, tourists cannot come from Europe. Even our Minister of Agriculture and Minister of Tourism are stuck over there. Well, I'm told that they just landed, and that's good news. So, at this time, Madam Mr. Speaker, we didn't cause that. We didn't cause any volcano to erupt or to send fumes and smoke all over Europe, and this is affecting our economy. It is in this context, Mr. Speaker, that our visionary leader, Prime Minister King, has indicated clearly on page 4 of the budget presentation that the budget is designed to build on last year's successes and to lay the foundation for a kind of recovery that generates and sustains growth with employment, engenders cohesion in our social structure, and makes us more resilient to external shocks. And I just mentioned an external shock. With the help that we are getting from our friend Taiwan, this is helping us greatly. Mr. Speaker, the situation could have been worse had it not been for the strategic intervention of this administration, which included stimulus packaging, period after period, other job creation packages such as HOPE, public sector construction, and we're talking about major road projects. And because of the tenacity, persistence, and relentless drive of the Ministry of Tourism and Agriculture in particular, this is just before the budget presentation, they were in Europe searching and looking for opportunities for our people. And that is why they got stuck. Mr. Speaker, a time for renewal and opportunity has therefore arrived. The inventory of all things in pollution, including our flora and fauna, our medicinal herbs, our fruits, and our many agricultural seeds, must take on greater value-added application for our domestic, regional, and national markets. And we have to put our heads together, because we will have to do this as partners. Emphasis, Mr. Speaker, must be given to the design of a new incubation platform to ensure that the leaders of these new startups are properly oriented in order that they can grasp and access the new opportunities and responsibilities. Conclusion, despite the worldwide financial and economic collapse, stands out among the OECD economies, led by the leadership of our Prime Minister. We stand out. All the indicators tell you that we did a fantastic job. This economy was managed properly, and we have this government, the government of the Stephen King administration, to thank for this. It is for the good fortune, Mr. Speaker, and confidence of our government that Saint Lucians have so much to be proud of. All of us can say hooray. It is undoubtedly clear that the traditional economic services, which were available before, have been lost. And we now have to shift, Mr. Speaker. We need a paradigm shift for a sustained economic expansion and primary driving force towards our overall development as a developing nation. And we require an economic platform to supplement for the continued growth of our country's GDP per capita income. This more than ever before must factor into the current national plans and existing economic realities the need for greater opportunities for management and ownership for more inclusion by providing greater levels of training. Our very own Sir Arthur Lewis highlighted the view that the main cure for poverty is not wealth, but it is of knowledge. And so now we have to secure the future of our people by looking at development more than ever in education. As a government, we recognize that creative ways must be found to drive economic expansion, with the express aim of delivering to Saint Lucians the ownership rights as leaders of new development plans. This is our commitment that we have made with our people, and we know we can deliver to our people, all of our people. Mr. Speaker, we also know that we have been delivering to our people. Just going to our communities, and they can attest to our good management and our representation of our people. This is why it is evident our Prime Minister is clearly on target. And that is reflected in this budget, which is far-reaching and directly designed to bring comfort and benefit to all solutions across the board. Mr. Speaker, every generation of leaders, every single generation of leaders since Adam Savage in the 1950s, particularly with regard to agricultural economies, have had to respond to challenges of their time. In 2010, nothing less than expected from the leadership of this government. So, Mr. Speaker, together with the people, we are asked to shoulder the responsibility that we have boldly accepted. We accepted this responsibility in 2006. We wanted to change the way this country was being run, and we were afforded the opportunity by our people. And we have accepted this challenge, and we are going to maintain a high standard of living and continue to provide opportunities, not to some generations, like was previously done, but to all the people in the prevailing global economic climate. Mr. Speaker, the pledges of renewal are for the maintenance of, and have a list, continual economic growth. No matter what happens, no matter what comes our way, we are working hard every day so that this economy can continue to perform. 2, quality and affordable education from early childhood to tertiary as the fundamental underpinning towards maintaining the sovereignty and ownership of St. Lucia for the generation yet unborn. 3, to develop a sustained culture of work through the productive enterprises, including the traditional and non-traditional sectors. 4, the Ministry of Labour is committed to ensuring that productivity levels are increased across all ministries, agencies, and statutory authorities. The Ministry further seeks the assistance of all ministers Well, all minister colleagues and permanent secretaries to establish this new platform. Again, I say that we have to do it together. You know, the times are hard, the times were not created by us, and so we must come together and perform. It is crystal clear that our Prime Minister and Minister for Finance has shown strong understanding of our fiscal and economic challenges confronting our communities, St. Lucia, the Caribbean, and the wider world. Madam Speaker, the cool character that he is, his level-headedness, coupled with his deep concern for the common man, you know, talk about a humanitarian. Anytime you think of a humanitarian solution, think of our Prime Minister. This is what he is. So, he has allowed the performance of this economy to flourish. And he demonstrated this through his priorities of choosing projects to finance. Madam Speaker, the essence of this budget is visionary. What the Prime Minister is simply telling us is to reach a port, we must sail. Sail, not tie at anchor. Sail, not drift. To reach a port, we must sail. We cannot sail anchor. Our Prime Minister and his approach is bringing life to the budget team, has identified 11 priorities outlined on pages 17 to 19 of the budget presentation. This mirrors the 8 points established under the growth program of the ECCB, which forms the body of its fiscal strategy outlined on page 52 of the presentation. One of the key plans of the fiscal strategy involves converting the debt to the ECCB debt target of 60% of GDP by 2020. Our Prime Minister has guidelines, and we are being very proactive in maintaining those and maintaining low inflation, which is projected to be 1% this year. So, again, full responsibility, very modest, very caring Prime Minister. Madam Speaker, I want to lend support to the Prime Minister when he expresses the view that our efforts to generate economic growth will falter without strategies for achieving social well-being and harmony. Again, as a government, we look at, you know, the social degradation of St. Lucia. You know, all the social activities we put in place before 1997, these were being eroded one by one. All the things we were trying to do for our people, for our children, for our sportsmen and women, they were taken away from them one by one, little by little, until we said to ourselves, the degradation had to end. And the people who in St. Lucia were in sync with us. They decided that it was time to end the degradation. And so, the former administration was removed. This means, Madam Speaker, that we must not only have social safety nets, but they must be well targeted. Again, the Prime Minister went further to establish the Social Reform Council and other vital organizations and initiatives, such as youth development programs to harness the energies of youth as planning agencies for the change and renewal. Madam Speaker, let me say a little bit on youth before I move on. Madam Speaker, as a former track and field athlete, I know the power of organized sports. I know what organized sports can do to transform an individual, to make up an individual productive. The time has come, Madam Speaker, to look at more after-school programs and sports programs to our out-of-school, throughout our schools, public and private. The credit score, which was mentioned by the Minister of Education, and I know in last year's presentation, we did say that this initiative would have started at the school level. I am saying here today that the credit score must be given support to be administered by the, maybe by the hierarchy of the police force, in providing appropriate training for all of our secondary schools as another platform for creating an enabling environment for the positive activities and leadership development among our youth. Within the OECS and the wider CARICOM territories of the Caribbean, much has been made of our common identity. Yet very little has been done to link the region's youth with sustained travel and the many collaborative cultural activities within the summer months. This would help in the harmonization of education across the region, which would add value to our national education system and thereby helping us to foster greater regional integration. And CARICOM is busy trying to foster regional integration, and there are simple ways to achieve this, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the list of recommendations in our search to find common solutions is by no means exhaustive. This government remains committed to providing the necessary resources to our youth, thus ensuring that succession for the future generation is not put at risk because of lack of commitment towards the long-term future development of our beloved St. Lucia. While the Ministry of Education, Madam Speaker, remains the focal point in shaping curriculum content and has the largest role for youth development, supported by the Ministry of Social Transformation, Youth and Sports, other interventions and solutions can positively influence data time management of our youth. Various organizations must accept leadership responsibilities in mentoring and providing positive role models to St. Lucia's youth. Let me, at this point, talk to you a little bit on crime by youth. You know, they are saying, they are, you know, we hear so much about our youth and crime. But, Madam Speaker, many in our society have identified as the source of our collective discontentment, otherwise known as youth crime, and the violence associated within the cultural body of the Solution Society. There are many voices, many, many voices, collective or otherwise, advocating for more severe punishment, including fines and confinement. As Minister responsibility for labor, broadcasting and information, and a constituency representative, I am painfully aware of those many voices, particularly those who have been directly impacted as victims of crime. So, this is something that we need to take very, very seriously. And we have to do whatever it is to provide more and more opportunities for our youth, to move them away from this type of activity. Madam Speaker, let me quickly look at some programs outlined by the Prime Minister when it comes to youth that would certainly help our youth as they develop and try to find opportunity. The concept, Madam Speaker, of the National Employment Bureau is indeed fascinating and exciting. It is designed to do a number of things in the area of developing our human resources by matching relevant skill sets with appropriate opportunities. The dynamics of the labor market requires an effective and efficient system to match employers with job seekers, as well as the establishment of a single system that supports and allows for focus to be made using data available in the system. For example, Madam Speaker, in areas such as economics, employment, job training, education, and others. The linkage can be seen. It makes good sense to invest some short-term capital into projects with great long-term potential that would benefit employers and employees, that would benefit job seekers and the country in general. The Labor Department will therefore be required to play an integral role in this regard. So let us make the linkage and let us see. Let me talk a little bit about the Ministry of Labor, especially the Labor Department, Madam Speaker. The role of the Labor Department is extremely vital and function to encourage and maintain a stable and harmonious industrial relations framework in collaboration with the social partners, and to provide quality service to the public through the administration and enforcement of labor laws. During this financial year, Madam Speaker, the very stable industrial relations climate experienced some industrial unrest in both the public and private sectors. In the private sector, the pending industrial disputes range from a decertification poll by the workers of the St. Lucia Electricity Services to complications in recognition poll by the employees of Royal Bank of Canada. At the same time, public sector workers were demonstrating and agitating for wage and salary increases and retroactive pay, even in a time when, to all of us, we felt that the economy of St. Lucia couldn't sustain and would put us under pressure if we provided an increase. Surmounting those challenges, Madam Speaker, took the collection of minds from all the prime stakeholders, including the Prime Minister, the St. Lucia Employers Federation, the Trade Union Federation, the National Labor Union. Madam Speaker, as Minister of Labor, I want to thank the staff of my ministry, the trade unions, and particularly employers for the manner in which they are responding to the global financial crisis. Some of them have made great sacrifices by pursuing strategies that show great sensitivity to the plight of workers. And we again want to thank them for that. Job losses were kept to a minimum, and many, especially in the tourism sector, were spared the full brunt of massive unemployment by implementing rotation and other sustainable approaches. Once again, St. Lucia, we say thanks. We say thanks to the employers, and we say thanks for your cooperation. Madam Speaker, this is very, very commendable, and we, on both sides of this house, must all say hats off to the healthy social dialogue that this government has ensured in the brotherhood of tripartism. Tripartism in St. Lucia is alive and well, and we must encourage it as we move into more difficult times. Briefly, Madam Speaker, let me say a little bit about the Labour Code. Much has been said about the Labour Code. My ministry has done all it could do to refer the collaborative amendments agreed to in January 2009 to the Attorney General's Chamber. But, Madam Speaker, as we speak, I know that the AG's Chambers is inundated with work, and they lack manpower. My discussions with the Minister in the AG Chambers, and he has indicated that something should happen soon. As I came from a recent meeting of Ministers of Labour, I did ask for some help from the ILO, so that the ILO can help the AG Chambers with a draft or two. And I was pledged support by some members of the ILO that they would do the best to try and help in this regard. So we can safely say that if this is pursued vigorously, that the recommendation from the tripartite consultation can be put into effect, and this labor code can be brought back to the House as speedily as possible. But the work that was promised by our government to go back to consultation, review the labor code, because we thought it was rushed, it has been done. It is a matter for the drafters to sit down, put the document together so that it's written here and the debate can take place, so that we can have a labor code that our member from Sucre will be satisfied with. Also, Madam Speaker, the planned labor code publicity program is to be aired on GIS and NTN to further sensitize the public to the code. The public will be further informed on this development. Another critical priority area, Madam Speaker, is the development of inclusive workplace policies to embrace people living with disabilities and HIV/AIDS. I do not want to dwell too much on that, but the purpose of the policy, Madam Speaker, constitutes an attempt at increasing the employment and employability of people living with disabilities. So this program is going to help us, and will probably help a lot of persons who are disabled and who are living with HIV and AIDS to get opportunities at decent work. Let me quickly touch on the Beaufort office or the Labor Department. The Southern Division Labor Office is a very large zone, which encompasses Bouton, Sucre on the west coast, and Parkhurst, Monrepo, Miku on the east coast. Due to staffing constraints, members of the public have often complained of the inefficiencies in the delivery of service that the office provides. The ministry intends to speedily address the manpower issues of the South to provide better service to the public. Conciliation, Madam Speaker. The Labor Department was invited to intervene in 26 disputes. We have the largest ever recorded, arising from a variety of sectors, including the financial sector, public services, and the media. Out of these, the National Workers Union was involved in 20, the St. Lucia Civil Association, STFA 5, and the St. Lucia Civil Water Fund and General Workers Trade Union 1. The department was able to achieve a 95% settlement rate with a few pending matters. Meanwhile, the Department of Labor continues to work in the areas of mediation, arbitration, and tribunal. Collective agreement and trade union polls with great success to ensure tranquility in the industrial climate in this country. Madam Speaker, as a government, we remain vigilant in monitoring the major challenges of income inequality, underemployment levels, poverty, vulnerability of our economy to a single shock, and the growth of both unprotected workers and the informal economy, all of which impact upon the employment relationship and the protection it can offer, and also the ILO's decent work program agenda. In this respect, the issue of minimum wage remains high on our agenda as a ministry. So let me talk about what is happening with minimum wage in Lusha and the cries by the public, for a review. In furtherance of decent work in Lusha, a minimum wage commission has been established and has been mandated to review the minimum wage regime and to submit its recommendations for a new regime by September of this year. So they are now working, offices of the Labor Department, they are engaging people across sectors in Indonesia. They are getting all the information that they need to make a judgment as to what we do with minimum wage. So we have to wait until the report is presented. And Madam Speaker, the ILO's decent work program agenda calls for a number of things. which I should try to highlight very quickly. The ILO's working document on decent work says that decent work sums up the aspirations of people in their working life. And we have a list of things that I will just run through. Productive work, fair income, security in the workplace, social protection for workers and their families, personal development, social integration, human dignity, freedom to express concern, freedom to organize, participation in decisions, equality of opportunity and treatment for all women and men. And when you talk about decent work and what the ILO is doing, this is what this government is striving for its people, to make sure everyone, you know, whatever they earn is decent enough so that they can live, they can survive on it, and they can carry on and have a family and be happy in our villages and communities. So, Madam Speaker, the work is ongoing. We had a lot to do, we had a lot to revamp, we had a lot to overcome, but the work is ongoing, and St. Lucia and St. Lucians will enjoy a very happy St. Lucia in the ensuing years. Madam Speaker, decent work implies decent pay, which would provide sufficient disposable income for a decent livelihood. Then we need, Madam Speaker, to be focused and united in our resolve to reduce poverty in our country. One of the several instruments that this government will use towards this end is the establishment of a minimum wage in St. Lucia. So, like I said, the Minimum Wage Commission is doing its work and the findings will be reported shortly. Let me turn to the labor officers of the Ministry of Labor. It is important to inform or remind the public that labor officers do not function as lawyers whose duty is to represent them in employment disputes, even though they have a good understanding of law generally. This is a notion that is widely misconstrued and must be dispelled at all costs, because to do so will not only compromise the nature and integrity of the industrial relations system and the role of the department in maintaining impartiality at all times, but will also deprive workers of their right to be adequately represented by a trade union or other legal framework. So we have to be mindful of this. Labor officers are neither trade unionists nor employers, and therefore are not expected to play the role of neither. Instead, they are the neutral social partners in the system, specially appointed to assist trade unions and employers in settling or narrowing the differences through internationally established principles and guidelines. Example, workplace inspection, conciliation, minor labor complaints, and trade union code. So they are not lawyers, so don't expect them to perform the job of lawyers. I now turn my attention to the Government Information Service, Madam Speaker. When I spoke here last year pertaining specifically to the Government Information Service, I indicated, Madam Speaker, that the GIS had received some new equipment, new equipment that had outlived its functional use. Most recently, the National Television Network purchased a significant piece of equipment that is allowing the unit to provide us steady stream of government information through news briefs scroll at the bottom of the screen, similar to what obtains at the international, at CNN and other international networks. So if there is an emergency, you know, you need something quickly to go out to the public, you know, continuously GIS through MTN can provide you that information at the bottom of its programming. Today, Madam Speaker, the department still does not have all the equipment it needs, but strides have been made in this respect. A little more on GIS, Madam Speaker. I don't want to belabor the point, but on the GIS website, Madam Speaker, there are numerous press government releases nearly 400 in the past 2 months. In addition, one can listen to the GIS daily 10-minute radio program, Government Notebook Online. As we speak now, this presentation is live on MTN. GIS has produced an estimated 120 television programs during the last year, an average of 10 television programs monthly. And I quickly urge members of both sides of this house to send to GIS website for up-to-date news on what is happening in government. And this is a place, member for Sufre, to know what's happening. This man speaker is in addition to several public service announcements, daily radio programs, live broadcasts, daily studio interviews and panel discussions. In the last year, almost every member of staff at GIS has attained some level of training or has been provided the opportunity to attend seminars and workshops, both here and overseas. So we are developing our human resources. The department has continued quietly to undertake the valuable task, Madam Speaker, of saving invaluable information by transferring hundreds of hours of material that tells the story of our nationhood. The history of the Indonesia, which was recorded on some ancient tapes, are now being transformed to more durable recording, so we can preserve the history of what has taken place in St. Lucia. This project is ongoing as we speak, so we do not lose, you know, those things that make us unique in our history. Madam Speaker, a major challenge still facing the department is related to space, and in this regard, the government is actively pursuing the possibility of relocating the department to more appropriate quarters. Today, Madam Speaker, and this is very, very necessary, government has filled the one vacant position of Director of Information Services. Among the duties of this position, of the person holding this position, it calls for the review of the National Broadcast Bill. Very important bill, Madam Speaker. Although the implementation of the legislation is expected to require considerable resources in terms of physical space, equipment and structures, such as the Broadcasting Commission and complaints redress and monitoring mechanism, we think that it would be worth the cost, given its long-term prospective benefits to all concerned in this country, our children, our social and community institutions, our media practitioners, and the country on our own. So if once the review on this has taken place, has to be brought to Parliament, and so, you know, we can better take care of what happens on television, radio, etc. Madam Speaker, we need to encourage our institutions to reflect standards, values, and virtues that we as a people believe would augur well for the benefit of our society. And our fair Helen needs all the help, you know, encouragement that is done. We think that it is time that the country has a broadcast act and all the ancillaries that come with the establishment of such an act. For example, the Broadcast Commission. And this is something I have already mentioned. Another reason why this thing is very, very necessary, because we are in a time when there is a proliferation of cable channels, more local services provided, widespread use of the internet, and the multi-purpose use of cell phones. A broadcast act, I am sure, Madam Speaker, will be welcomed by members of the public and by members of both sides of the Honorable House. Again, I will quickly mention that this can help us in what is happening with the talk shows, etc. Copies of the draft bill has been circulated to managers of all media houses, and a committee has been established to collect comments for consideration before the final draft is brought before this Honorable House. A quick paragraph on Radio Sengusha, Madam Speaker. It is well known that Radio Sengusha carries two incompatible mandates, that of being a public service broadcast entity and operating as a commercial entity. A public service broadcaster has the responsibility to transmit programming that aims at improving society by informing viewers. In contrast, the aim of commercial station is to provide popular content that attracts a large audience, maximizing revenue from advertising and sponsorship. For this reason, the ideals of public broadcasting are often hard to reconcile with commercial goals. So, as Radio St. Lucia tried to marry this, it obviously is finding itself in difficulty. Management, Madam Speaker, is continuously revisiting RSL's program, the format of the program, in an attempt to make the station more appealing to its audience and attracting listeners. So work is ongoing in this, and I'm sure listeners of Radio St. Lucia would realize that over the last year or so, you know, things are changing for the betterment of Radio St. Lucia. Madam Speaker, let me quickly turn to a few constituency matters. Madam Speaker, General, January South, I'm not talking about January now. But I love January now too. January, Madam Speaker, before the start of my representation, suffered from a unique state of abandonment and forgetfulness, despite the rhetoric of TQR. I'm sure you remember this rhetoric, Madam Speaker, total quality representation. There is nothing in totality, nothing qualitatively, and the representation, well, let us just say that the poverty data in form of the reality. But things are happening now, as we speak, in this beautiful constituency of ours. The place is starting to look like a place. But I'm sure, what did we inherit? From our predecessors. Non-existent and deplorable infrastructure, such as roads and drainage, abandoned and dilapidated buildings and homes, sent someone to a situation of despair. Even at one time, Madam Speaker, a talk show host referred to January as a place that had experienced a hurricane. Was probably grieving at the time, and suddenly grieved me deeply. The grief is gone, and there has been a dramatic change, which is all encompassing, Madam Speaker. The focus here is not on playing cheap and petty politics, because my politics is universal. My politics is FC for all. Not for some, like I've mentioned on so many previous occasions. We have engendered employment and economic activity where the value of property has been increased by leaps and bounds. People can walk and drive comfortably from Lime to the north, Borobel in the south. Madam Speaker, Delhi has seen the change. That is why they made the change. They know that change will continue for the betterment of the line and that of the village in general. Every initiative or improvement that is made, the detractors are mad and get even more furious when a project is undertaken for the benefit of the children. This is not a time for personal invention. It is a time for all to come together to harness our creativity.
And remember, you had 10 minutes more.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To develop a better journey, and I want to let them know that this is so, Madam Speaker. We are not going backwards. We are on the forward march. We are progressing. We are making strides. Madam Speaker, we are not worried by the message and one. To invite you, Madam Speaker, to come to our humble but proud village to see the progress that is ongoing. If you've been in Denry before 2006 and you go there now, the people can tell you of the difference. You can ask questions. We are conscious of the reality that unemployment remains a major challenge. And this is why this budget is so structured, to take the corrective measures to address this in a serious manner. That will reflect in the major works to commence on the reconstruction of the Clendon Mason Memorial Secondary School under the BID program. We have over 85 million to be poured into the general basin for the ecotourism development, and that will touch the heart of the economy of Denry. I challenge anyone to ask the question, what has happened in Denry under UWP in 3 years that did not happen a decade under Labour? The answer which will come from within is simply, and I'll probably steal that from the Yardman Laddie, Ashai. The vision for Denry continues because the people of Denry trust the United Workers Party to continue to deliver. Madam Speaker, let me quickly go through the vision. Very quickly. There are a number of things that we are trying to do, Madam Speaker, in this village. Very quickly. Construction on a new site as part of the relocation of the Denry Infant School to a site which was earmarked pre-1997 near the Denry Secondary School, but which was given to a constituent. The land there, Madam Speaker, was given to a constituent for personal use. This land, Madam Speaker, is for use by our people, for our children's education, and will be reverted for this purpose. The present location of the infant school is very dangerous, Madam Speaker. I've spoken about this, and I know the Ministry of Education is working very hard on this to get this project ongoing. Because of its location, they have a road running right through the infant school, right in the middle of the two wings. You know, we have little kids at school there. We have no facilities for extracurricular activities. So, and the building is dilapidated, etc., etc., etc. So we need to move this school. And I know that the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Education are working on this as we speak. So we move the infant school. What do we do at the site of the infant school? Madam Speaker, we are going to construct or upgrade this facility where the present infant school is to a civic center where we will house our library services, resource center, class resource center. We will have the village council office. We will have the youth and sports council, youth and sports council office. The parliamentarian, where the rep's office will be there also. And we look at the possibility of other things. Where the current library is located right now, which is upstairs, the General Multipurpose Center, we have a General Multipurpose Center which is used by the Mistika for.
Honourable Member for Kasi Center.
Madam Speaker, I rise to crave your indulgence in invoking the application of Section 3210 to permit the member an extra 15 minutes to conclude his presentation.
Honourable Members, the question is that Standing Order 3210 be invoked to allow Honourable Member for Denry South an additional 15 minutes to complete his presentation. I now put the question, as many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of the contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. Member proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you, London. For this additional term, I think my constituents need it. So, Madam Speaker, right now, at the Multipurpose Center in Denry House, we have housed there the daycare and also the library is on the top floor. So, once we can move the library to a new location, our youth can start to make use of the intended purpose of the Multipurpose Center. And so we too have to also find a place to build a daycare, and the proposed site is just, we want to share the spot near the Clinton Mason Secondary School for a daycare and the infant school. Okay? So there's enough space there. So this is what we are proposing. Madam Speaker, we will continue to build sidewalks and drains and footpaths. And we'll give attention to this, as we have done in the past years. There's a lot more to be done. We will continue to support the farmers. I mean, I don't have to go through the programs of the Ministry of Agriculture. The farm roads need improvement. I'm working to help alleviate the plight in some of the roads. I know that the roads under the Community Project will sooner rather than later come on stream, and we have been waiting for this for a very long time because the Denry Glavier road is down to be done. Madam Speaker, we are going all over the constituency and constructing drains, etc., to prepare them so that, again, we will get support from the Ministry of Communications and Works to have our road in the village paved. We will continue to provide and to construct roads in areas that are needed, especially those areas where we have a lot of unplanned development. We will bring the necessities there, whether it is water, electricity, okay? We will construct drains to protect your home, the people of Denry. We know that is ongoing. And once our friends, once you stay with us, our friends will be with us, so we will not have any problem. And we have every confidence that this will happen. These are not the days when you know you hated yourself. You know the difference. As I say this, I want to tell the people of January. I mean, you know me. You know that nothing in this world can change my love for you. You ought to know by now how much I love you, because you can see the love, you can feel it. So we will continue. We will do, and we will propose in. I resourcing at the old police station site in Lakai, but you know the data decision was made for this facility to be passed on to the General Village Council. It was burned down. I wonder what happened to it. So now we'll probably have to go and spend and look for money wherever it is to build a resourcing in the Lakai area. We have the building already, now it's gone. You know, all we would have to do is to renovate it and outfit it to house the resource center. But we have to find new ground. Or it might have to be built where this burned down building is. We'll continue the Lakai Court. Whatever happens within the next 3 months, this Lakai Court will be completed. We will, in Lakai 2, build a park, a community park. So, Madam Speaker, proposed in the budget presentation is the waterfront development under the village tourism program. And we will create recreational areas, we will develop the general playing field, and my goal is to make this general playing field, this football field, and I'm sure I mentioned this before, the survey has been carried out and we are looking at what the possibilities are in turning the general playing field into a mini stadium, and I want no less than having a track running around it, okay, a 400 meter track. So we will continue developing the sporting facilities. And my people know that I don't joke about these things. We will continue putting in employment generating initiatives. And we will surely upgrade the fishing port in the village. This is a promise that I've made. The only reason that my part has not been done on this is because of the total development of the area. So, you know, you do not want to do one thing and then the other institution. So we have to collaborate and we have to work together and make this place a beautiful place. So general waterfront and the fishing facility. Madam Speaker, let me conclude this presentation. As Minister for Labour, Information and Broadcasting, along with the dedicated effort of the staff at my ministry, I will continue to pursue the direction and agenda of this government. We will continue to promote and enhance social dialogue between labour and management, trade unions and employers' organizations, as well as the promotion of positive and harmonious dialogue and interaction between government authorities and our social partners. All of this, Madam Speaker, is geared towards the objective of ensuring a stable industrial climate. As my open door policy is well known to all in the tripartite circle, Madam Speaker, with the unshakable determination of our Prime Minister, unanimous support from Cabinet colleagues, Frontier colleagues, the support of the nation and the guiding hand of God, then Lusail will maintain its steady course on the road to recovery, engineered by continued growth, social cohesion, and resilience with national shock and to opposition. We will not be distracted, Madam Speaker, nor be derailed. one cannot be on time, Madam Speaker. 2007, we tied one, one cannot be on time. It was visionary, Madam Speaker, on the part of this government to open its diplomatic doors to the government and people of the Republic of China on Taiwan. This has blossomed into a fruitful experience, an exchange which has grown shoots all over St. Lucia. In every town and village, the people are saying, yes, Prime Minister King, you and your team are sensible, practicable, and wise. They are contented with the deliverables that this government, along with its friends and partner Taiwan, has delivered. Let me take this opportunity, Madam Speaker, to thank God for giving us the strength and courage to Taiwan. On behalf of the people of DNA and St. Lucia in general, permit me to express my heartfelt appreciation and gratitude to the government and people of Taiwan for their generosity and friendship. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I thank you, Madam Speaker.